Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Checkerboard Radio, your home for all things ball, with Lee Crow, at Lee Crow, and Andrew Durego, A.W. Durego on Twitter. You're listening to Checkerboard Radio, a Beast Sporto channel.
Welcome into Checkerboard Radio here on Ball Sports Radio, a Beast Sporto channel. I'm Andrew Durego. Joining me, as always, is Lee Crow. Big win yesterday. Close to getting the 70-10 score prediction Lee had for Tennessee over the Western Carolina Catamounts. I kind of put it a little closer. 56-17 was my prediction. A lot of great games on yesterday across the country. And that's kind of a you like week three and week four a little bit more than week one and week two, because you start to see the conference play. You start to see some of the bigger non-conference matchups. First off, Lee, how are you doing today?
I'm great, man. I'm pretty pleased with yesterday. I think they took the foot off the pedal a little bit in the third quarter, but because I wanted my 70, but I'm good other than that.
Yeah, a lot of good games on yesterday, and the one takeaway I kept as I was watching games throughout the day yesterday, especially the SEC games, is three teams in different situations all went for fourth and goal from anywhere from the half-yard line to the yard line to the two in Florida, Missouri, and Ole Miss. All three came out with touchdowns. All three won by narrow margins. I mean, obviously you can't say, you know, that's the reason they won, but if you look at the Missouri game, if they take a field goal to tie it or to make the score, they would have been down 1-6-5. That's a whole different ball game. Whereas they got the touchdown and your final score was 6-9. Same thing with Florida. Florida went for it early in the game, playing on the road at Kentucky. Florida doesn't get a touchdown. Let's say they take the field goal. If nothing much changes, Kentucky has to drive for a field goal to win the game and not a touchdown. Ole Miss went risky right out the gate and said, you know, we're going for it. We're down in Alabama. Let's play. Ole Miss wins by 6. And I'm not saying this as a, you know, I think everybody spent all week criticizing Coach Jones and his analytics line. But, you know, the thing it shows to me a little bit is coaches like Hugh Freeze and McElwain, both on the road, and Missouri at home, they're pulling out that little extra stop for a win.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and one of those things is you can't always go by a script. You know, I don't hate to be, you know, beat a dead horse, but you can't always go by a script. A lot of football is feel. It's going for it with your gut, that kind of thing. And that's why coaches make the big bucks. They make a big-time call, go for it. And, you know, they live or die with it. But I don't even think it was that big of a call last week. And I don't really want to rehash it. But, I mean, if they did not get that fourth down last week in inches, they still have Oklahoma got to go the distance, 99 yards plus, with a screaming crowd. And they couldn't hear anything that first quarter. So I think it was just a terrible call last week. But there's no need to get back into the Oklahoma stuff. We could talk about the really good things they did yesterday.
Yeah, we do have an exciting show today. Joining us in about 20 minutes will be a former Vol defensive back and friend of mine, Chris Treese, to talk about the past couple games and looking forward to Florida now that it is officially Florida week. And we also have a surprise guest joining us while Treese is on. Also, I was doing some looking at stats leading up to my show prep today. I just want to throw a couple out at you. First one, I told Lee this, and I tweeted it out already. Alvin Kamara does not have any negative rushes for the season. Every carry has been positive yardage or zero. No lost yardage when he gets the ball. So that's pretty impressive. I mean, and a lot of there's not been a lot many lost yardage on carries. Obviously, Dobbs has some from taking sacks. I mean, Jalen Hurts lost only 17 yards, giving him an even 300. So he's averaging exactly 100 yards a game. But the one stat that I was looking at was the receiving numbers. And I tweeted this one out as well. And I don't know if Lee saw it or not, but Lee, if I told you, or if anybody told you preseason, that through three games, Marquez North, Von Pearson, and Pig Howard would combine for 8 catches, would you have believed them?
Absolutely not. I would have thought Pig especially would have had, you know, been getting a lion's share of the work just because he's been kind of a go-to guy the last couple of years, you know. That's unbelievable to me.
Yeah, and, you know, your new yardage leader for receivers is Preston Williams, who racked up 98 and is with 3 catches. His first 3 catches, 2 of them he took in the end zone. Your leading receiver is Josh Malone with 9 catches, 92 yards. So he's leading in catches, second in yards, tied second in touchdowns with 1. Ethan Wolf's not far behind with 7 catches, 71 yards. The ball's being spread around a lot, and there's been some criticism about that this week that, you know, maybe receivers aren't being able to find a rhythm with how much they rotate the receiving group. What do you think about that, Lee?
Well, I mean, yeah, that is a valid concern. I'm not a guy that likes to run 10 guys out there. I like, you know, for a guy to get a rhythm. Like we said, I mean, a large part of that game out there, being on the island as a wide receiver, is getting in the head of the guy defending you, and you can't get in the guy's head if you're yanked every other play or you're out there every 5 plays. I mean, you can't trash talk to a guy if you just beat a couple times, you know, earlier if you're not in the game because you've been yanked for a guy just for rotation purposes. I think Williams got into a rhythm last night. He did pretty well. I mean, I can't believe they didn't give Preston, you know, 2 more yards to break the 100-yard mark, 100-yard mark, because that's been such a topic of discussion in the media and on radio, especially the past, you know, couple of weeks, because – you know, they haven't had a 100-yard receiver since Pig did it against South Carolina last year, and before that it was Marquez North the year before against South Carolina. So it's just odd that they wouldn't try to get that monkey off their back and get this guy 2 more yards.
Yeah, it was interesting seeing how much they kind of, like you said, they do spread the ball around, but you'd like to see a guy get in a rhythm. And the one thing I've noticed through these 3 games is, kind of, if a guy does make a big catch, you know, over 10 yards, Tennessee immediately goes right back to him. They took, like, after Malone had a catch yesterday, they went right back to him then. One thing, and I kind of semi-predicted it, almost an obvious prediction, that I said Malone and Preston would be targeted deep last night, and they both were multiple times. It's not a bold prediction by any means, but it is kind of, as I explained to somebody on Twitter, I like it because those are 2 guys that need a confidence boost. And Josh Malone is getting touches, but it's not the amount of touches that, you know, that would build. He's getting screens here and there. Yeah, you can throw him screens. He gets 2 or 3 yards each time. That's fine, but he's a very talented receiver. It's between the ears is where he's messing up. So you see that, and so now you say, hey, let's throw it deep to him. Let's let him get some confidence. Same thing with Preston. Everybody has seen Preston's personality on Twitter and in interviews. So now Preston is probably one of those types, like, you know, you're a Chad Johnson, Terrell Owens type of guy, probably maybe sitting in the meeting or on the sideline saying, hey, let's get me the ball. I want the ball. And I'm fine with that. I want cocky receivers on this team.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. And that's one of the things you can't really get if you're constantly rotating these guys, really. I mean, you got to let this guy feel himself. Got to get a little swagger to him out there. And you can't do that when you're rotating him in and out as much as we do. And I know, I understand that when they use those guys in the play calling, so they'll run the play in with a lot of receivers, which, you know, that's the way they do it. That's the way they do it. But I like to see a guy getting a rhythm, and I like to see a guy get, you know, targeted 8, 9, 10 times sometimes. You know, yesterday they had 21 total receptions, and they were split 9 ways, 9 different receivers. So, I mean, you know, I'm a little old school. I like to see, you know, a top group of 4 or 5 guys tops get all the catches.
Yeah, I think you look at other teams that do have a – you look at an Ole Miss that has a marquee receiver in Laquon Treadwell or South Carolina with a Pharaoh Cooper, and you expect Tennessee to have something like that, like a guy that is going to be targeted 9, 10, 11, 12 times a game and come up with 7, 8, 9 catches in a game. But
yeah.
I don't think that's Tennessee's game plan. I don't think that's how they want to do it. I don't think outside of Pig last year, you didn't really see guys have multiple catches. I mean, you're not going to, as long, unless something massively changes, I don't think this Tennessee team with this staff will ever have a guy with more than, you know, 70 catches. It's going to be guys with 30, with 40, with 45, with 30. It's going to be spread out. And, I mean, as long as you win with it, more power to it. But I think Tennessee fans do want a guy that is being targeted, especially when all we talk about is wide receiver U. Well, it's hard to be wide receiver U when everybody has one catch a game.
Yeah. And, you know, they're still targeting receivers in the recruiting class. They've got Jeff George had a big night last night at junior college. He's coming in. Of course, they lose Pearson, Jonathan Johnson, and Pig. So there will be three guys leaving, and I guess they expect Jeff George to contribute right away. But they'll still have a cluster of receivers right there splitting the ball. You know, as Williams grows a little in maturity, he gets a little older, he's going to want that ball more after he had his first taste of success last night. Guy had no training camp. He comes up there and balls out. His first time under the spotlight. And, that's not his want for the ball is not going to diminish. And here he is, you know, another guy at 6'5 coming in, still got North back, still got Malone there. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out over the next few years, and especially with, getting quality receivers in the next couple of years recruiting classes.
Yeah, and one of the things, once that I did notice from the season already, and this is something that a lot of people complained about with Oklahoma, and that was getting Alvin Kamara the ball. Through three games,
yes.
he only has 26 carries for 195 yards. Through two games, true freshman John Kelly has 21 carries for 92 yards.
Yeah. Inexplicable, man. Inexplicable. I maintain, you can't tell from the body of work in three games, but I maintain that Kamara is the best guy, the best football player, period, on either side of the ball for that team. And I'm pretty sure some scouts would back me up on that if I had one on the show, but that guy is the real deal. I would feed him the ball until he couldn't run anymore. He'd have to get an IV and get dehydrated. I mean, get rehydrated every game. I'd be running him to death because I'm sure he'd like to be showcased and head to the league, so I'd use him in punt returns, passing game, get him 15 carries a game without fail. You know, that guy is a time bomb waiting to explode on somebody he saw on those punt returns yesterday. Unreal. Just unreal ability.
Well, and one of the things that, especially with last night, we saw it with his punt return for a touchdown, and I think it was his first or second carry that, had he not barely stepped on the sideline, which had taken to the house when he just outran everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Combine what we saw with Kamara at punt returner last night with what happened to Kurt Majette last week against Oklahoma. And I'm not saying Kamara is not a huge star, huge player on this team, but after seeing what Kamara can do in the punt return game, gives me all the more reason to believe Cam Sutton should not be back there. And that's nothing against him as a punt returner, because he had a great game returning kicks against Bowling Green. Western Carolina kind of tried to avoid kicking to him. They're kicking towards the sideline. Oklahoma kind of shut him down a little bit. But you've already lost one player potentially for the season. And why is, even though he is a dynamic athlete, why have your best, arguably now the best defensive player, definitely your best player in the secondary, back there returning kicks when you have Evan Berry, when you have Alvin Kamara? It's just asking for a special team's got to take him, maybe even take a cheap shot on him.
Yeah. You nailed it on the head right there, but, I mean, it isn't really an arguable point. I think Cam Sutton is hands down the best player on defense for that team. and it would be a devastating loss if he went down, especially on a punt return. I mean, if Kamara was to get injured on a punt return, you still have Hurd, you still have punt returners that are capable of doing the job in a Barry, or even like they put Josh Smith back there to clean up in the fourth of that punt return. So you have adequate guys that can fill in these positions, and you still have John Kelly and Joseph Young, who also got in yesterday, two true freshmen. So you do have guys that could carry the rock if need be, if he did go down and get hurt. But you can't afford that if Sutton goes down. You can't afford it. I mean, Martin played well yesterday in cornerback duty, and Mosley's still pretty solid. But that's one place you're already down a guy. You're already down Galvin for the year, so you can't really lose Sutton. He's like the heart of the defense.
Yeah, I'm fine with it, but it maybe just be the paranoia in me. Because I know both you and I were texting each other during Oklahoma, upset that Majid got injured during, agreed, a freak injury where you chip your hip bone on punt safe. But, I mean, that's football, though. Strange injuries happen. And going into SEC play, this is where you need to keep guys healthy, keep them on the field so that they can play. I mean, if Cam Sutton went down right now, Lee, would that change your win-loss projection for the rest of the season? If we lost Cam Sutton for the season.
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
I would take at least one game off.
Yeah, I would too. Absolutely. What did you think of some of the O line play in the second half? It was mostly comprised of some of the young guys, freshmen. They had Mosley in there on one side with Dontavis Blair. Never thought I'd see him get a third quarter rep, but you know it happened. So, what did you think about seeing some of those guys? They didn't do poorly. I mean, they did obviously kind of shut it down in the third. But what did you think about that next level offensive line in the second half?
I mean, I'm fine with it. I might even sound like Coach Jones here. I'm fine with those young guys getting reps. I wasn't expecting them to just come out and pancake everybody. I think the one thing you've really learned from it is that Drew Richmond is more than likely getting a red shirt this season.
Oh, yeah. He's about the only person that didn't get a participation yesterday in the stat sheet. So I didn't see him in there. I saw several walk-ons in there, like Edwards getting time on the line. And, of course, Blair might as well be a walk-on. I won't even get into that, but I tweeted last night just looking at Mosley at left guard and Blair at left tackle. If you didn't know anything about those guys, you'd be a little nervous lining up against them. But that's the marshmallow squad.
Yeah, I mean, I'm completely fine with it with the younger guys coming in and playing some. But what I want to do real quick before we get our guest on is let's play some of these comments from Butch Jones from yesterday. If you can set that up for us.
Absolutely. I'll just set this up. This is Butch basically talking about Preston.
His biggest impact, likely stretching the field, is that where he's maybe the best right now with how big he is and his ability to get down?
Well, actually, he's really good in the intermediate throws, in quick game and curls and outs and comebacks. But he's just so long, he can play the ball in the air and he can run. And it was great to really get him going tonight in two touchdowns and one on a scramble drill with Quentin. Then obviously the deep ball, but we're going to need him to continue to progress, and that was great to see with him. And I will tell you, here's a young man who had zero training camp. So every practice repetition, every practice repetition that Preston has is critical because he didn't have a training camp. So, again, these live game repetitions are big for him, Jimmy. I'm sorry.
You talk about Dormley's touchdown passes. He's scrambling,
yeah.
and he threw that pretty much on the road.
He did. And Quentin's had a very, very good training camp. He's had very good practice habits. He's been consistent all year. And to get him those valuable repetitions, and we have a lot of confidence in him, and that confidence has been earned by him by his performance in practice, and also by his performance in meetings and his leadership qualities.
Coach, you mentioned Ladero.
what goes through your head when you see him intercept that ball, considering, you know, you thought he was done? What does it mean to you?
The first thing I was thinking is go score and then take care of the football. But, again, it's a great story of resiliency, perseverance. You know, it was a very trying 2 weeks for him and his family. And then the emotion of, you know, your football career is not over with. You know, you don't have to have surgery. And just getting him back in the fold. And we wanted to ease him into the game tonight. We just didn't want to give him an inordinate volume of reps just because he hasn't played football in a while. And very fitting, though. He does his due diligence and video study and all that. So it was very rewarding when he had that interception.
As you get ready to lead your team into SEC play, how is it different? Where are you more confident that this team is ready for the next six-game grind than in your first 2 years?
Well, you just used the adjective grind, and I agree with you. It's going to be a grind. And our maturity, especially from our younger players, they don't understand what it's like yet to go through an SEC grind and an SEC schedule and playing on the road and then playing at home. And, you know, this league is so balanced, but the different nuances, you have to be able to adapt and adjust week in and week out with schemes, and you have to be flexible. And this is a big week for us because also it's exam week. So it's going to be big that we win in the classroom and that we manage our business in preparation. But this football team is very close. They have a lot of belief. They're very, very resilient, and I knew that by their approach coming on Monday, but they've showed that resiliency. Now, are we going to be tested? Absolutely. And every game has the ability to go down to the final game, to the final play of the game. And so we have to make sure that we have great weeks of preparation, we get some of our health back, and we continue to create depth.
What's your level of confidence? How is it different than your first two trips into the SEC?
Oh, it's much different. We expect to win, and I believe that's what this football team, they expect to win. Now you have to earn victory every time you go out there. You have to prepare to play your best game, and those are the two things I asked our players is I asked everyone in that room, I said, okay, first of all, if there was one word that would describe your play tonight off of your football identity, what would it be? And then what would be our group identity of 9 for 9, being 9 strong at power of the position? And so on Monday, they'll present their one-word adjective that describes their style of play. But we have great expectations. Our players understand that. But this group just comes to work every day, but we're going to be challenged. But, you know, I'm proud of them, and I'm proud to run out with them, and I know they give us everything that they have each and every day. This team works hard. They have great work capacity, and I'm grateful to them, and we have good leadership.
That was Butch Jones talking about the performance yesterday. Obviously, they had quite a bit better tone after a nice win like that, and still got a lot of the coach speak, though, as we'll always have. But what did you think about his comments, particularly on Preston?
I mean, I think he's proud of him. I was more impressed with his comments on Ladarrell McNeil. But we do have our first guest on, and because I like setting him up, he was the guy that created this, so he's never been on the receiving of it. But joining us now is Chris Tree, so I got to play a little intro for him.
Ball Rewind.
Chris Treese, former DB at Tennessee, former host on Tennessee Sports Radio, allowed me to be his co-host there. Treese, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm good, man. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. You know, it's nice. Sundays are always a little bit sunnier when there's a big orange win on Saturday. Wanted to have you on just to catch up with you, see what's been going on. It's your thoughts on, you know, Tennessee through these first three games and leading up to Florida next weekend, and then also what you've been doing lately with training players and Treese Advantage. A lot of guys actually may not know this, that you there's players on this Tennessee team that you work out with in the off season and when they were in high school. Guys like Jalen Reeves, Maven, Rashawn Golden, Ryan Jenkins when he was here, now at Arizona State, Riyadh Jones who's now at Georgia Southern, a lot of guys also in the high school level. Devin Harper at Carnes, who's an Oklahoma State guy. Gaston Strong out at Fulton, Zach Dobson at Fulton, a lot of local guys that are even putting in work with to help get them better and see if you can get them up in the college game. But first off, you know, what did you think of the game yesterday against Western Carolina?
You know, the game yesterday, it was used for what it was intended for. You know, it's a stat game. And anytime you have a game like that, you want to play as many players as you can to get them, you know, the game reps, but also some experience. And so it was really good to see Quentin Dormady to come in and him perform well, because at some point in the season, you may have to rely on him. I hope nothing happens to Dobbs, but, you know, there's always that risk in major college football that a player gets knocked out. So I thought it was very good that a lot of guys got a lot of valuable reps, you know, moving forward, because I think the future of Tennessee football is set up well with their freshman and sophomore classes. But in order to get them up to speed, they have to get in the game and play. And I thought they did a good job of allowing everybody to play yesterday.
Well, you mentioned Dormady, and, you know, sometimes Twitter, especially Orange Twitter or Vol Twitter, whichever one you want to call it, overreacts a little bit. And people have been upset with Dobbs' play a little bit, not hitting, you know, a couple accurate passes. Then they see Dormady come in relief yesterday and throw some lasers. And I saw a couple tweets, you know, of people saying, should Dormady maybe get a little harder look if Dobbs falters a little bit? I mean, outside of just a catastrophic game, could you see Dormady becoming the starter this season?
I don't think he'll become the starter this season just because I don't think that's realistic. Obviously, this is Josh Dobbs' team. The thing with Dobbs is he needs to be more consistent. He got off to a hot start yesterday. He needs to find a way to be more consistent over the course of a 60-minute game. So that's something that is correctable with reps and practice. But I don't see Dormady. Everybody just needs to calm down and relax. The future is bright at quarterback. We saw that yesterday. But for right now, Dobbs, Tennessee has the best chance of winning with Dobbs.
Therese, we saw in Oklahoma a little bit, but it's changed a little bit since yesterday. You know, Alvin Kamara didn't get many carries against Oklahoma, only had four and then one reception. But then yesterday, we saw a little bit more out of him also in the punt return game. If you were on this offensive staff, how would you divvy up the carries between Hurd and Kamara?
You know, that's tough for a coaching staff because you always want to stay with the hot guy. And, you know, obviously Jalen Hurd is a big back. He had a very good game yesterday. He's had a stretch of three really good games. But, you know, I made this comment yesterday. With Tennessee having so many playmakers, the problem is going to be keeping everybody happy. And you don't want somebody to get their feelings hurt because they're not getting a lot of playing time. You know, you have to really work hard to guard against that. The first one that sticks out in my mind is Pig Howard because, you know, he's been a huge part of this team. He didn't get a lot of reps yesterday. You've got Jawan Jennings and you got Preston Williams now and, you know, Josh Malone and all these other guys that are playmakers. And you only have one football. So it's going to be a daunting task for this coaching staff to keep everybody happy. But, you know, with Kamara and Hurd, you obviously are going to need them down the stretch of an SEC schedule. So they, in my opinion, they need to figure out how that they can get these guys a whole lot of reps because they both bring a different dynamic to the table in the backfield.
Therese, with the DBs, you know, that's your group. Those are your boys. We saw a little bit in Bowling Green and a little bit in Oklahoma, just guys getting kind of picked on a little bit. They kind of avoid Cam Sutton. If you had guys like Malik Foreman and Mosley in the room with you right now, what would you talk with them about, you know, you might get picked on because you guys aren't dominant corners as much as Cam Sutton is?
Well, they're not trusting what they see. And with, you know, Emmanuel Mosley and, you know, Malik Foreman, what I saw in the Bowling Green game and in Oklahoma, they were guessing. They were reaching. They didn't trust their eyes. And when you go up against a talented receiving group, what Oklahoma has, and you reach rather than set your feet and slide, then somebody like a Shepherd is going to get behind you. I mean, that's just how it works. Same thing with the guys from Bowling Green. If you make a mistake and you don't set your feet and you're reaching and lunging, it takes you more effort to try to get back into that route. Cam, and I've said this since Cam was a freshman, Cam is the only corner that I've seen that could make a mistake like that, but he's technically sound enough to get back into the route. That's not the case with Emmanuel Moseley or Malik Foreman. Malik and Eman are both two of the fastest guys on the team, but when you have sloppy technique, it takes too much effort to try and catch up. So, you know, they just need to trust what they see. And I think a lot of the secondary problems in that first game was because Willie wasn't there. He wasn't in the box. They couldn't really make in-game adjustments. Both of the guys have played better over the past two games, but again, it all goes back to technique, and those are things that can be corrected in a week of practice.
Well, Chris, this is Lee Crowe. Thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate having you on. Thanks for giving us a couple minutes of your Sunday. I want to do – I'm an older guy like you, Chris. I was up there at the same time you were. I think I'm like maybe a year younger than you. But you remember the year they rebuilt Gibbs and a lot of folks were living in North Carrick over there? Do you remember that year?
Yeah, I do. I lived in both Gibbs Hall. So it came in 86,
yeah.
Lived in the old one. I actually lived in Morrell during the renovation, and then we moved back in for my redshirt sophomore year. So, we had a blast in 1987 living on campus with the students. We won 10 games that year, and it was, you know, it was really a good thing for us because we got to meet a lot of the students that we normally wouldn't got to meet because we had lived in Gibbs.
Right. I know a lot of guys from that era. We've had Terry Bailey on before. He's kind of my boy. Every time he comes to Murfreesboro, we'll get a lunch or something in. And I met a lot of those guys. But I got a little surprise for you. That'll take you down memory lane a little bit. I got a guest for you, Chris, and I'll just set him up with this.
Snap down. Kick is up. Blocked. Chasing after the ball. Who comes out of there with it? Tennessee will have possession. They're going to run with the football as it's picked away at the 25 to the 30, to the 35 to the 40. Breaks to the outside to the 45 to the 50, to the 45 to the 40. Floyd Miley can fly. Floyd Miley has the ball at the 15, at the 10, at the 5. He has gone all the way. Touchdown, Big Orange. Darryl.
I got one of your position group on. Floyd, you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Floyd, what's up, man?
On Checkerboard Radio. There you go.
Hey, how's it going, Therese? How you doing,
going good,
man?
Going good. Floyd came in the year after Preston and Kelly Days and I came in. He came in with Jeremy Lincoln. So he was, you know, Floyd was one of our little brothers that we kind of took under our wing and showed him how to do things the Tennessee way. So he, you know, had a great career, you know, has done very well. After life of football, you know, he's positioned himself very well with his career. So proud of you, man. Proud of everything you've done.
Thank you. Hey, Chris, I'm just trying to follow in your footsteps, man. You know, you've always been one of those players that I looked up to, you know, and respected. And like you were talking earlier about the defensive backs, you know, trusting their technique. You taught me how to trust my technique, how to trust my skill, my talent. And that helped me as I matured because it's a difficult process. You know, you're a man on an island. You know, you only got the sideline of your players to help you, but you got to trust your instincts and your talent better. And that's what you expressed to me. And I've always, always respected it. And I also respect the way you played the game. You know, regardless of what was going on, you always played 110%. And it showed that you loved and you embraced the University of Tennessee.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, I appreciate all the kind words, Floyd, but I think that the thing that was so great with our group was we were all extremely close. You know, I've said it for years that our class that I came in with was extremely close, but that team over that course of 3 to 4 years, the entire squad was very close. And, you know, people always make the joke, well, you know, it wasn't the coaching staff's team. It wasn't Coach Major's team. It was our team. And we had, you know, senior and junior leadership that took the reins. If you got to Coach Majors, your career was over.
Right.
I mean, let's just be real. So, you know, Tim Caron, he ran it, but, you know, it was the seniors' teams, and that's what we tried to instill in the younger guys as they came in every year.
Right. Definitely.
Well, guys, you guys, we talk about this a lot. We've had a lot of guys older on, like my age and whatnot. And just looking at this squad you were on, just take for example some of the guys you played against. It's possible that every day you guys were in practice, you were actually seeing better competition than you were going to see on Saturdays. I mean, we're talking Alvin Harper, Anthony Morgan, TC, Thomas Woods. You guys played some of the best receivers that you've ever faced in practice.
It was it was a daunting task. And, you know, last week, Anthony Miller, one of my classmates, came in to be honored for the Oklahoma game. And, you know, this was probably the best receiving core that I ever played against, and they were on our team. You know, and Anthony, you know, went on and had a long career in the NFL, but I couldn't check anybody on our team. And a lot of people don't remember, but Sam Grady was on that team, and he won an Olympic gold medal with Carl Lewis. So, you know, that team, we had the ability to stretch the field at any given moment, kind of like this team now does. I mean, they're able to stretch the field and blow the lid off of coverage. But you're right. I mean, every day in practice was a battle. So when we got to the game, it was, I'm not going to say easy, but it was easier because anytime you face physical receivers like that with that kind of speed in practice, you know what to expect going into a game.
Yep. And also, you guys mentioned the 87 season. Talk to me, Floyd, tell me a little bit about that 88 season, the difficulties y'all faced, because that was a rough year for everybody. And tell us a little bit about that 88 season.
88, oh, man, you're talking about a hard year. That was one of the most difficult years I've ever experienced in life, period. I mean, it was a transitioning. And we were young. You know, many of us, Ernest Fields and Darrell Hardy, played in 87, but we, for the most part, were redshirted. Our whole entire team was redshirted. And so it was a growing process. And we were trying to, as you change the guards, we were trying to come up with our own identity. And we ended up losing the first six games, not because we were not competitive or we were talented enough. It's just that we didn't know how to play together as one. And it took us six. Go ahead.
I think the most difficult thing for me, going back to the 88 season, was we just came off a 10-win season in 87, you know, beat Indiana in the Peach Bowl, and we basically had everybody back. And I remember that summer that everybody stayed on campus, and we put in the work. I mean, we did the work. And we go to Georgia in the first game, open up SEC play in the first game of the season, and I can remember that it was just a different feel because Georgia at that time had four top running backs in the country. They all four went pro. We didn't have an answer for them, even though we had very talented defense. I just felt like we didn't make enough in-game adjustments to stop them, and the personnel groupings were wrong. You know, TD drops a punt, they recover it. We gave them a short field the entire day, and I think we kind of got down on ourselves and lost a lot of confidence because we did have everybody back. So that's kind of my spin on it. I think the turning point was the Alabama game, only losing them by 8 points, 28-20. We should have won that game, but we didn't. But, you know, I can remember in the locker room after that, Marion Hobby saying, and Sterling Hinton saying, we're never going to lose another game. So, you know, it was just a different feel that moving into that season.
Well, you guys started off, I mean, now it's a little different. You got some non-conference guys mixed in, but you guys started off right off the bat with at Georgia, then you had LSU and Auburn in the first four games there. I don't think anybody was really pushing the panic button until that second week when y'all went down to Duke.
Yeah.
That kind of caught everybody off guard.
Yeah, and you know, Steve Spurrier was there, and we had never seen the Fun and Gun. That was the first time it was introduced to us. And, you know, we made their receiver, Clarkston Hines, and their quarterback look like All-Americans that day because we couldn't shut it down. And, you know, we also lost to Washington State. They came in and beat us as well. So it was just, like I said, that 88 season was just odd because we had the talent. We had some injuries at key positions, but we were relatively healthy. We just didn't know how to finish and play together like Floyd was talking about earlier.
Guys, Treece, I know you'll remember this from our time working together. The one thing I always like to ask former players is about the changes that's gone on at Tennessee. We've had the switch to Nike and obviously a new variation on the gray jersey. What do you guys think of the changes to the uniforms this season?
I don't like them. I don't like the smoky grays. I don't like the smoky gray helmet.
Just right out the gate.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew, you know how I am. I'm a traditionalist, like Floyd. I think some of the changes are good because you have to keep up with the times. But I'm not a fan of the smoky gray helmets. The jerseys, the uniforms, I'm okay. The helmets, I have a problem with, just because, you know, I'm old school.
It's not that white helmet with the Howard T on it.
Right. I mean, that's Tennessee. You have the white helmet. You've got the orange stripe, power tees. Let's go strap up and play ball.
Right, exactly. I like the I want to stay with the tradition as well. Orange and white, just the way it always has been, because that's been a trademark for University of Tennessee for so long. And to mess with that, you're messing with tradition that goes back hundreds of years. As far as the smoky gray uniforms, I'm 100% on board with Chris. I don't like them. But I do understand that it needs the trends change in this world, but they need to stay as close to their tradition, because it's tradition that's going to continue to rebuild this program, not the excitement and all that other stuff. Tradition build programs, and they maintain them.
I mean, I'm not I'm not going to go to a school just because they have flashy uniforms. I'm going to go to a school because of tradition and the name on the front of the jersey. So that's where I am. That's the reason I chose to come to Tennessee. I was an in-state guy. I'd grown up watching them play over the years. And, you know, I love the color orange and watching them come through the tee and, you know, all the tradition that came along with it. So that's the reason I chose, not because of a uniform or you had a Chick-fil-A on campus like the kid committed a couple years ago at Auburn.
So we have several guys on, you know, from different eras, and it looks like the line is like 1996. Like anybody before 96 is a traditionalist, and anybody after 96 is mad because they didn't have the new Nike uniforms. It's hilarious. But I'm in your guys' age group, and I guess we've all turned into that get off my lawn kind of guy. But Kerry Bailey was on the show. He said that the United States flag is red, white, and blue, and the Tennessee Volunteers are orange and white. That's the way it should stay. So that's kind of the feeling that a little of the guys from our era have, I guess, about that tradition. And I agree with it. I'm not a huge fan of all the bells and whistles and the gray helmets. I don't mind the gray unis too much, but the helmet is just over the top. I mean, it looks sharp, but, I mean, if somebody just turned on for the first time and, you know, and wasn't real familiar with Tennessee, I mean, it would kind of cheat us in our history, I think, a little bit by seeing this uniform.
Yeah, and to me it's all about branding, you know. You have to brand your name, and why try something new? Why not keep with what's been working for so long? But hopefully they will get it together at some point. I mean, I don't mind them, you know, they got the back of the helmet is kind of checkerboard now. I don't mind that. That's kind of nice. It's a nice touch to it, but it's still traditional. You still know when you turn on the TV, that's the University of Tennessee, because oddly enough, I was sold on Tennessee back in 85 when they beat Miami in the Sugar Bowl. But I like the color. You know, the whole orange and white color, it was there. It was a basic uniform. It was nice, but it was a different type of orange. And so that piqued my interest. But I knew instantly whenever I saw that color, that's the school they represented. If you put a gray in, you don't know who you're really representing.
Right. And here's the other thing, Floyd. You know, bells and whistles and, you know, Nike, Adidas, gray, black, whatever. The bottom line is you have to win ball games. I don't care what these kids get. The bottom line is all about wins and losses. So, you know, you have to win, period.
Yep. Well, guys, thank you guys so much for coming on. I want to give each of you a chance to plug anything you got going on and give everybody your Twitter handle. They can follow you on Twitter. Floyd, I know you were in the process of writing a book, or you finished the book. If you want to plug your book and tell everybody where they can find you on Twitter, the floor is yours.
Okay. Basically, as far as the book goes, the first book that I wrote, I'm in the process of repackaging it, because so much has changed since me writing the book and now. For many people don't know, I'm now studying to receive my theology degree from American Baptist College, where I hope to pastor. And once you change, that kind of changes your whole outlook and perspective on life. And I want to give the readers something that they could enjoy as well as benefit from my experiences. But I am in the process, because this year is the 25th, actually 2016 season will be the 25th anniversary of the South Bend game. And I want to get together with either former players that was a part of that and write a book, you know, giving the fans a different perspective of, you know, they look at that one particular play or that one particular game, but they never consider, because they don't have the knowledge of what happens, how we build up, the things that we go through in order to perform at that high level. And I think that will give an insight to the University of Tennessee's program, a positive insight, let me say that, to the program so they can understand, you know, what these cornerbacks are going through currently, because we all go through a process. Chris has some troubles at UT on the field. I had some problems at, on and off the field at UT, but I still kept going. And it's something that you want to give back to the fans for the appreciation, the thank yous, and all that other stuff. As far as reaching me, you can reach me at Twitter at FloydMiley22. Also have another one at RealTalk, R-E-A-L-T-A-L-K 69 on Twitter. I'm on Facebook under Floyd Miley. And pretty much if anybody wants to email me, the email address is the same, FloydMiley22@gmail.com.
Thank you, Floyd. It was good to see you at the bowling ring, too. But I appreciate you, you hanging with us a little bit and coming on today.
Oh, man, no problem at all. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed talking with Chris. You know, I haven't seen him in a minute. I'm going to get up there to see you this season. I know that. So we can hang out and talk about some old times.
I'd love to, man. I'd love to catch up with you. So just hit me up when you come in town.
Okay, I sure will. Y'all take care.
All right, thanks, Floyd. Thanks, Floyd.
Bye-bye.
Chris, tell everybody where they can get a hold of you, man. We miss you on the radio in the mornings, bro.
I appreciate that, man. You know, I'm on Twitter at Treese Advantage, on Facebook, obviously, at Chris Treese. You know, as far as what I'm doing now, you know, Andrew alluded to it in the opening piece. I train athletes. We help kids clean up their footwork, work on their technique, work on hip flexibility, their eye discipline. You know, I'm proud of all the guys that I've trained. You know, you see Jalen Reeves-Maven went off last weekend for 20-plus tackles. His footwork is a whole lot cleaner. His transitions coming out of breaks are a whole lot cleaner now, and that's some of the principles that we teach, how to get from point A to point B as quick as possible, and it's all about muscle memory. So that's – we work with – I mean, everybody thinks I just work with DBs or defensive guys. I work with receivers, offensive linemen, quarterbacks. You know, Xavier Malone, who's at Fulton right now, the phenomenal freshman quarterback, been working with him with his footwork and trusting his – technique and what he sees. So that's what we're doing now. So I love every minute of it, still being involved in the game.
Well, Therese, the one thing I did want to do is I did want to thank you, one, for coming on today, and two, for I also want to thank you for giving me an opportunity at Tennessee Sports Radio to be your co-host, your producer, and experience, you know, covering this team with you. It was a lot of fun doing that. And with your work with, you know, your academy and Therese Advantage, I want to see if you could pencil in some time to help me out with my 40 time a little bit. It's still kind of
You know what? You know what? I don't know if I have enough years to help you with your 40 time. You know, I remember what you ran that day. You know what? You got put at a disadvantage because we had a very short period of area there. You didn't really have enough space for your runoff. So I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and just say that you pulled up. That's why your time was so bad.
And it wasn't a flat surface either.
Right, yeah, it wasn't a flat surface. It had a whole lot of bumps and valleys and stuff in the surface. So we'll give you the benefit of the doubt, and maybe we can do it again some other time because it was fun.
All right, man. Well, hey, again, thanks.
I was going to say, so you're saying there's not enough muscle memory? You know, there's not enough muscle memory to help Andrew with his 40 times, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, he's got those old athletic legs. I don't know how much pop he still has in him. You know, I'm 47 years old, Andrew, and I probably can get a better 40 time than you can right now because when I'm training with my kids, I had like a 9.8 broad jump just messing around showing them how to do it technique-wise. So, you know, anytime you're ready to train, you let me know. I got you.
All right, I'll hit you up, man. Again, Therese, make sure you follow him on Twitter at Therese Advantage. Hopefully we can get you back on later on in the season, talk some balls with us more again, man. That was a lot of fun hearing you and Floyd talk about the old man days that I was too young for.
That's back when football was real. Lee, tell him. Clue him in.
Oh, yeah, that was real back then. That's when it was real. Yeah. Yeah, I want to see some fullbacks put back in it. That's what I want. I like fullbacks, so put me some fullbacks in there.
There you go, the I formation. So,
all right,
guys, I appreciate it. It was fun. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Therese, appreciate it. Tell your family I said hey.
Sure will. Thanks, man.
But that was Chris Therese and Floyd Miley, VFLs from the late 80s. on a Rocky Top. Great guy to talk to, you know, in the DB connection. Definitely got to have both of them on later on this season. A lot of fun, a lot of knowledge between those two as well.
Oh, yeah.
Lee, let's just do the phone lines. We got a caller from the 706. Bring him on. 706,
hey,
welcome to Checkerboard Radio. Hey, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Not much.
Hey, Chris.
Been a little bit better than I was last Sunday.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, I think everybody is.
I got a question, though. After last night's game, it was good to get our young guys in there and everything. Do you think that they pulled them out really early? I was kind of disappointed that they didn't let Hurd bust out another couple 20 more yards and get another 100-yard game. But do you think that pulling somebody like Dobbs that early, do you think it'll mess up his rhythm going into the Florida game? Because, I mean, Florida, granted, they had to play a tough game. And I think Will Greer took a knock. I don't think it was serious because he went back in, but he seemed like his ribs were bothering him, maybe a bruised rib or something. But do you think that it maybe messed up Dobbs' rhythm? Because that's kind of been his issue, is his rhythm. I mean, he had a decent rhythm in Bowling Green, and then he couldn't get one going in Oklahoma. And then he had a decent rhythm, it seemed like, early in the game yesterday, granted it was Western Carolina. But then they pulled him, like, I don't know if it'll carry over to Florida.
I don't think that'll mess with his rhythm. I mean, Andrew may have a different view. I don't think that'll mess with his rhythm at all. I mean, he's still got to have a 4 week of practice in between the games. It's not like he's. I mean, I don't think it'll mess with his rhythm at all. I think he looked pretty good yesterday. He's accurate, and as long as everyone does their job, I mean, I think he'll have the same. Well, not the same performance, but a similar performance on Saturday. I expect a win in the Swamp. I mean, what do you think, Andrew?
Well, it's kind of one of the smaller plays, and I need to go find it and. When I rewatched the game, and maybe I'll try to post a vine of it. And it's a play that Tennessee actually got a flag on for intentional grounding. Western Carolina brought the corner blitz from Dobbs' left side, and it looked like they were going with a swing pass to either Hurd or Kamars. There's somebody right there kind of just out in between the numbers and the hash mark. And Dobbs was going to it immediately, but he turned – like he took the snap, turned, saw that corner there, and kind of almost did like a semi-pump fake towards that receiver in the corner, stopped and kind of played contain on it, and then he turned and had to roll out to the right. I was blown away by that, honestly, because it's night and day from what happened last week when there was a corner blitz. Dobbs got completely rattled. Yeah, he got the intentional grounding because he just threw it a little – I mean, if he – the commentator said, you got to learn where to throw it. Just throw it 10 yards downfield towards the sideline, not 5 feet in front of you. He maybe thought he was out of pocket more. But to me, that was one of his better plays just because, you know, Dobbs 2 weeks ago probably would have either tucked and run or thrown it on the swing pass right there. For a loss. I mean, yes, they got a loss, but thankfully there was a pass interference on Malone the next play that kind of negated it. But, I mean, it was still, you know, that's week-to-week growth that you see with Dobbs adjusting to a play, because I guarantee Western Carolina saw the success that Oklahoma had and said, hey, let's try this.
We could ask him as well, but I'm sure Quincy told him, like, immediately after the game, you know, just to discuss that with him and tell him, I'm sure he told him just to throw it out of bounds next time. I mean, other than that, it was a great play by him.
Mm. But in regards to Chris's question about, you know, do I think it throws off his rhythm? I don't. I think he'll be perfectly fine. I think, and after watching the vast majority of the Florida-Kentucky game last night, I don't think it's going to be a Dobbs game where he's throwing it 25, 30 times. I think he might throw 17 to 20. Because Boone Williams was gashing Florida last night. And I think Kamara is hands down much better than Boone Williams. Boone Williams is a great running back for Kentucky. I know one of the plays that I think it was in the third quarter for them. They ran it on 3rd and 14, and Florida still kind of had the box stacked. They were almost expecting it. He still busted out, broke tackles, and I think really the game plan is going to be for
Tennessee against Florida this week is we're going to wear you down with Hurd, and then we're going to have Kamara's speed come in and cut you up. And especially with Florida's front seven, it's not the most impressive group. I mean, and versus our offensive line, but I can't picture our receivers doing much on their secondary unless they go four or five wide and start spreading it out. But Tennessee's not going to do that. I think it's going to be a run heavy, old school ground and pound game that I don't think we're going to see a high scoring game from either team. I think it's going to be a close, hard fought game in the trenches. I'm not making a prediction now, for a score or a winner, but I think it's going to be on the ground from Tennessee. I don't think that they're going to try to throw it that much on them.
Yeah, and even Florida secondary, I know Vernon Hargraves is coming off that knee sprain, and you could kind of tell later in the game that he got burnt by, I forget which receiver from Kentucky it was, but it was a slant, and I wish I could have got a screenshot of the scene. I mean, it's probably the best pass catcher Cole's had all night. Hit the kid on the slant, and they showed him from the end zone, and Vernon Hargraves laid out on the ground, like, couldn't catch him. I think that his knee's still bothering him. I think that they have to have him in there. Like, it's not a need. They just don't have any depth behind them. But then their front seven, I think Jalen Hurd is going to – Morrison's still kind of recovering from his injury, and I think that Jalen Hurd's going to just run down their throat. And then if you send Kamara out on a sweep to the outside, I think that Vernon Hargraves' mobility and their secondary isn't back to 100%. And Kamara has proven that he can cut. I mean, that little fake slide he did in the first game, I mean, I think that – I definitely think – and it's always been like that. If you look at every game, I think for the last, like, 10 games, whoever won the ground game won the game against Florida, Tennessee. And last year, their superstar on the ground, he's gone. They don't have – I mean, Jordan Scarlett's a good kid. He's a highly rated recruit. Really hasn't proven anything this season. You know, the most we've heard about Taylor is, you know, his unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. That's like the biggest thing you've heard about him all season. So I don't think their running game is up to par to really compete. And I mean, if Darren Kirkland balls out like he has been, you know, JRM keeping his pace up, they're not going to be able to get a running game going. And I think that with that O-line they've got, it's going to be a long night for them. Like I said, I don't see it being a huge scoring game, but if Tennessee wins, I could see Tennessee winning by two scores, maybe like a 10 or 14-point lead just because of the ground game.
You don't want to jump out there and give us a score prediction?
I'll say 21-13. That's going to be my score. Tennessee.
I think that's a good score. I think it'll be a close game like that. It's not going to be a lot of fireworks, I don't believe, unless somebody busts off one in special teams, you don't expect to boost the score up. But yeah, I think you and Andrew are correct on that. I think it'll be a fairly low scoring game. I'll be taking the under on that, whatever it is, I'm sure. But Chris, thanks for calling in, man, and I appreciate
man.
You getting in. We're running up on an hour. I guess we'll holler at you next week.
All right, man.
All right, appreciate you, Chris. Lee, one of the one thing, I don't know if you heard this last night, I'm not going to play it, I'm just going to read the comments. I think I might have just a new favorite coach in college football. And it's not for play calling or anything like that. It's Cliff Kingsbury from Texas Tech. Did you say
I know he's a favorite with the ladies. What did he do this week?
Well, after Texas Tech beat Arkansas yesterday, in his postgame press conference, Kingsbury said, quote, Bielma stood up and said, during a recruiting visit right in Texas, Bielma stood up and said, if you don't throw to the fullback, we'll kick your ass. If you throw it 70 times, we'll kick your ass. Well, Bielma just got his ass kicked twice in a row and probably next week by A&M as well.
Wow. Yeah, I like that too. That's refreshing to see coaches talk like that.
Just to say, hey, you just got your ass kicked. And especially with Brett Bielema, you know, complaining about team schedules 2 weeks ago, and he picks up L's from Toledo and now Texas Tech. the way they're playing right now, and it might be the injury to their starting running back out for the year, I'm almost about to change my prediction on Tennessee. I'm liking them in this game now, but that's going to wrap it up for us. Fear the Walking Dead tonight on AMC. Free plug for them. Thanks again to Chris Treese and Floyd Miley coming on the show today to talk with us. Make sure you download the Vols Radio app from VSport. Oh, it's on Twitter at Vols Radio. Make sure you follow Lee on Twitter at Lee Crow with an E. Follow me at Andrew Durego, A.W. Durego, excuse me. This has been Checkerboard Radio on VSport Radio, part of the Vols Radio channel. Everybody have a good Sunday.
Three, two, one.
Checkerboardradio.com.
Yeah, Barbara, it's Richie. Yeah, look, it. I ain't never coming home no more. Take it easy.